Can I interject and move on?
Yeah, one last interject.
One question. I agree in some extent, but I believe that because of modern technology, that I am hearing the difference between modern technology and everyday situation. I want to name another building for the benefit of the engineers there that had some years in it, but it's not a sick building. It's the Graham Hall building, which holds the Ministry of Agriculture. A very solid building, a building that has been... So my argument about this is that somewhere along there, I'm beginning to believe that we have started to build buildings, but we have not acquainted ourselves with down-the-road conditions in terms of the air condition, as explained by the gentleman there, in terms of the material. And obvious, if these things is not conducive, then down the road, with the various bodies, with the various types of entries of human being in those buildings, over a period of time, is going to have sick buildings. And that's my conclusion.
All right, thank you very much. I want to get to the WhatsApp here, which really could bring some more focus to the issue. This one says, good morning, gentlemen. I am not an architect, but I feel that one of the main reasons of sick buildings is the fact that we build in the mold, no pun intended, of the first world countries. But we need to use the culture of the country to design. Use the year-round sunshine for generation of power. Place the computers in the center of the building and use a standalone AC with its own measures. Use more fresh air by having windows which should be open daily. Just a few thoughts. Now, that's the average listener out there. I just want y'all to interact with your more like knowledgeable selves to thinking like that.
All right. So you can open a building and allow what, in inverted commas, fresh air into a building. But if you're situated next to the bus terminal or you're situated next to a factory, that air is not going to be fresh. So yes, the building has to be designed in its context. So it's very difficult to put a broad brush on that scheme. So he has a point to some extent, but you have to take the vernacular, you have to take the situation that the building is in into consideration before you can just go ahead and do such and such.
However which way you boil it down. The fact of the matter is that this is a complicated business. And it's become more complicated because of the technologies being used and because of the problems we're trying to find to solve, and also because of the standards that the occupants of buildings expect. So in the old days, you let air through a building, but to be quite honest, in those days, what we would have accept as a comfortable building would not be accepted by employees nowadays.
Yeah, of course not.
In order to meet those standards, there are standards in place in the developed world that we, I must admit, emulate because we see ourselves as people who want to be developed. But those standards require expert interventions. So you put HV systems in place, HVAC systems in place to meet those standards. But those HVAC systems are complicated, complex. They need a different type of maintenance than we have been accustomed to in the past. But we have not updated our management and our administrative systems to this new kind of technology. The new kind of technology, for example, based on standards. So before you build, Dev keeps talking about design. The point he's making is that if you're going to be using these complicated systems, and it's the same thing that Peter just said, you have to design each one on its own face value, on the standards you want to meet, on the location, on the challenges you will face, where the fresh air is coming from. If your fresh air is coming from some nebulous place, then you're back to square one. The design is going to be different to a building that is probably up on the East Coast coming straight off of the Atlantic Ocean. So it is complex. So from BAP's position, what we are beginning to see is that our problem is not any particular building or even any particular challenge. Our problem is a systemic problem where we need to update our systems to suit the kind of technologies that we are forced to use in the 21st century. We have not been doing that. We're still doing things...
Who is responsible for updating these systems?
Well, in the first place, the establishment of standards is a governmental responsibility. It requires those people in parliament, a couple of people as to say aye. The national standards people, they have done their work. They have established a standard. It is an impressive standard. Everybody isn't going to agree with it. I think the architects have some issues with it. The engineers have some issues with it. Everybody has some issues with it, which is good. That's how it should be, because we'll argue about it and we'll make it better and better and better.
Correct.
But it is there. It meets international standards. It is It is quite impressive.
But there must be some specific ministry, because there are lots of patients saying so I want to know, in terms of, is it the, let's say, Ministry of the Civil Service or National Housing? Because in order for the media to assist with the agitating, the improvement of the system, we need to know who the persons, as engineers, who okay these type of standards.
Well, it is the ministry that is responsible for national standards, the mm-hmm. National Standards Institute.
Right, the ministry
under
that.
I'm not sure which ministry they fall under, to be quite honest. But
we could always, I can always investigate that. Not a big problem. And Mark, our caller, talked about learning. And I want to say we're learning a lot here, because when I was looking at the NAS building, I was thinking, why don't they just give that an industrial cleaning, slap a coat of paint on that, put it back into use? But when y'all talk about the ventilation and the systems and so on, I see that we do have some things that would need to be done. But my whole thing is that we make buildings for people and not necessarily people for building. What are some of the things that people, and I want to go to Dr. Donna on this one, what are the things that people can do in order to protect themselves or to keep themselves healthy or to mitigate some of the factors that would impact upon you in these buildings that we've been talking about all morning?
I think it's a difficult question, and I think that Engineer Dev actually sort of hit a little bit on the topic of humidity. Mm-hmm. Often in these buildings, we actually tinker with the AC systems ourselves, adjusting temperatures, maybe opening windows and doors that are not really supposed to be opened. And really, even if the system was designed a certain way, we are really not using them as designed, which will impact also in terms of outcomes. Now, with high humidity, what you tend to get is increase in mold formation. And we know that we have a very atopic or allergic population in Barbados. Now, all of the studies show that the majority of people who are adversely affected by sick building syndrome are actually female. They tend to be female, young, tend to be office workers, often not in managerial positions. And really, because of our tendencies towards allergies, a lot of people will present with rhinitis, sinusitis, or postnasal drip, wheezing. And what the patients will have to do is to, one, avoid triggers. So if possible, get a dehumidifier in the office or some sort of system to keep it relatively dry. Keeping the humidity probably between 30 and 50%, and I suppose Dev or Peter could actually tell me if that's what we are working with now. Mm. And the other thing is that for those who are diagnosed with asthma or asthma-type syndrome, you will end up needing some type of medication to mitigate against severe illness when exposed.
Mm-hmm. I actually like that. Like, something you could do, you can buy a dehumidifier. Anybody can go pick up one of those. I see Dev shaking his head. Taught us. Education.
Right. Well, just backing up a little bit and addressing the caller's points. One of his suggestions was to introduce more outdoor air. Another suggestion was, why don't we just open a window? So again, when engineers or very competent engineers put together designs, they design based on the standards we just spoke about. And throwing more outdoor air at the building or in the building is definitely not a solution. What we're going to do is, if we're going to do that uncontrolled, we're going to introduce the pollens, the high humidity in our type of tropical environment into the building. The HVAC system will now be called upon to do a lot more latent load control, sensible cooling, which is the cooling that we feel. The thermostat will now be reading a higher level than it is set at. And people are now going to come and tinker with the thermostat and try to lower that, and everything is thrown out of balance. Some people are going to find that their room is too cold now, and someone is going to find it's too hot, and then someone's going to put a piece of tissue in the diffuser to block off a part of it, and the entire system is thrown out of whack. Going back to design, we have competent engineers, and they know what they're doing. The building is supposed to operate to design intent and maintain to ensure that design intent is met. The good doctor mentioned introduction of a dehumidifier. Again, an air conditioning system, central air conditioning systems, are designed to handle humidity control in a building. It's designed by our competent engineers to do that. If that's not working, let's find a problem. do we have enough capacity in the building? Is a chiller on the roof down? Is half of a chiller not running? We don't have cooling dehumidification capacity to produce design intent. Let's find the source of the problem and put that system back to the, where it was at design. And let's not wait too long to do that before we're going to be seeing mold growing on the walls. It's very visible. You can see the black stuff at the corner of the buildings and so on. It's become too late. You need to have evacuate the building at that point and redo it. All right?
But can I say, though, following up on what Dr. Allen was saying, not all sick building syndrome is a very common thing. I mean, people do get sick. Normally, that's a normal thing to happen. What happens is that when they concentrate the cases of people working in the common building, then you know that you have a problem. And this problem could maybe, these problems may be non-specific. So what may, it may affect me one way and another person completely differently. But not all cases where there is sick building syndrome is a massive air conditioning problem that requires reinventing the wheel and all that. There are some cases where it could be because somebody storing old boxes in the corner. Or somebody introduced a new chemical that they never used before. Or somebody, you know, suddenly decide to open a window because they want fresh air in next to their seat, and it's affecting the whole air conditioning system, as Dev points out. So just because there's sick building, a number of people goes down with sick building syndrome, does not mean that you need to call the fire service and the army and everybody to change everything. Sometimes it could be a very, very simple fix. If you look and see what changed and how can we change it back. Mm-hmm. So we don't want people to panic now just because two people get ill at work and think that you have to close the building down. There are some steps you can go through that can actually solve the problem. What concerns us are the number of cases where it goes beyond that, all the way down to the point where it is clearly a fault of the MEP system. There's a design problem and there are fundamental structural flaws that speak to poor design in the first place or not meeting standards or, as we've known often to be the case, very, very poor maintenance. Those are the ones that really concern us at BFP, not the normal run-of-the-day thing that can be solved.
All right, it's 10 minutes before noon. We've got the architect, we've got the doctor, we've got the engineer. You've got our numbers. The lines are full. When we come back, we go straight to you. But I must let you know, this program is brought to you in the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful permaclad U-panel and R-panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christchurch 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
9 minutes before noon, we are sitting around the table with the experts. We have Trevor Brown, Lieutenant Colonel Trevor Brown. He is the president of the Barbados Association of Professional Engineers. We have Mr. Peter Sandiford. He is a director with Habitat Architectural Designs, Inc. So he's an architect. We have Dr. Dawn Allen. She is a
pulmonologist.
Yes. A lung specialist. So she knows and she'd be seeing people who are impacted and affected by these very sick buildings. And we have engineer Devran Marjoran. He is from the
IAQ Solutions, Inc., member of BAPE.
Correct. And he is, I would call him the AC expert. All right. He knows a lot about the cooling and ventilation and air conditioning buildings. So we definitely have a very, very competent team around the table here that can answer all your questions. So we go to the lines. I actually want to read this WhatsApp before we go to this first call. It isn't that long. It says, Corey, I often hear of the knee-jerk reaction with regards to the old NAS building in Fairchild Street. This is usually persons who do not know or don't understand and remember the number of persons who were seriously ill from working in that building. That is a very sick building. The solution would be implode it and go again. The old NAS building would have green, gray, smelly water coming from the walls and the ground floor. This has gotten worse with the rainfall. So he said, implode it and start fresh. Brasta Sunday, good morning. You're on the air. Good morning. Welcome to Brasta Sunday. You're on the air.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Good morning to the panel.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes. I want to know something. I might be foolish in this because he's talking about the sick building, right? But I'm subject to those sort of smells, and so I had diesel trucks all around me. And I had to spend real money at the doctor's after. I had to even get a lawyer to get you from around me. And another thing, I live on the road traffic pass, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cars pass through the side road all morning. And even I was thinking it is the African dust that is above, because you have to mop every day the houses, the chairs. You see the black dust, the exhaust from the cars and the big trucks and container trucks coming through here. You understand? And it starts to make me sick again.
Yes, you are absolutely right. The fact of the matter is that we live in a completely different world than we had in the past. Mm. We have a modern environment now that is contaminated with chemicals that you would not even want to know. You have fumes, those diesel fumes. I mean, we know that they're dangerous. But this is the world that we live in. They're not going to go anywhere. Well, maybe they will when fuel prices get high enough. But in the interim, it is a major, major problem. So that you understand the kind of problems that designers face in trying to build buildings and make them habitable so that we can avoid the kind of problems that you outline. Somebody mentioned the NIS building. The NIS building, as we were just talking here, is right next to the bus stand. It's right next to a major road with very slow traffic all day long, very, very busy. Can you imagine the challenge of some engineer or architect trying to build a building there to house a couple hundred people, maybe, in an environment that don't make them sick? It takes a different look. It cannot be done with the kind of thinking that we had in 1980 or 1990 or even 2000. It's a different level of thinking. But our problem at BAP is that the national systems in place to ensure that we meet these modern standards, that meet these modern challenges, is the same thinking that we had in we have not changed those systems. We still have maintenance systems where, for example, you have competent engineers in charge, but in order to get funding to buy a pump, for example, they have to go through the consolidated fund. They have to go through complicated, ridiculous financing systems so that by the time they get the pump, the system has failed. If you listen to Engineer Dev, for example, talk about how complex these HVAC systems are with chilling waters and important pumps, if one of those pumps go down, the other systems goes out of balance. Everything goes haywire. So picture you are waiting 6 months for permission to buy a critical pump. It cannot work in the 21st century. So we need systems in place that can actually respond to that. And one of the things I would like, if I get a chance to talk about, is how these kind of problems are addressed in other countries. In the US, for example, in England, there are systems in place that make sure that when a specialist HV engineer decides that a pump needs to be changed, the pump is changed, because the consequences of not changing that pump will be expensive, long-lasting, health-impacting, and productivity-impacting, which we are seeing in Barbados. Now, that if you look at our South Coast Source Project, we are spending millions of dollars now to solve problems that if we had done it right up front, we would not even be talking about, you would not even know that there was a South Coast Source Project. But because we did not have systems in place up front, because all over the world they have those systems and they're not having these problems, because they have standards, and they were built to standard, and they were maintained to standard, so they don't waste millions of dollars building injection wells and doing other things. Same thing goes for our buildings, same thing goes for our roads. This is what we have been preaching at BAP. The more we delve into these problems, the more we find that the basic problem is our fundamental system of administration and management for national infrastructure. So I take your point. You live in a world, unfortunately, where the modern environment is contaminated with all sorts of challenges. And this puts an extra challenge on our doctors, as you heard from Dr. Ali, on our architects, on our engineers, to try to design buildings that can protect your health from these dangerous chemicals and external environments. It is a real challenge. We have to up our game, and that is what we are calling for at BAP.
Okay.
Just adding to what Colonel Brown has said, ma'am, you're particularly dealing with a situation where the byproducts of incomplete combustion is severely affecting your health. And you know what's happening there, you're inhaling a lot of CO, carbon monoxide that is, nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, and so on. What is going to happen, ma'am, is that these byproducts, you know, they will damage your body's defenses, all right, if it's not already happening, and I sense that is already happening. It will compromise the process of oxygen transfer, all right? Your natural breathing process is to take in a certain percentage of oxygen with the rest of the natural gases occurring in your environment, and the exhale gas has a higher percentage of carbon dioxide that you would have inhaled. That process will be compromised. This results in a strain on the heart, the lungs, the entire body. It will result in premature aging of the lungs and eventually lead to heart disease. Ma'am, and I don't want to scare you, but even cancer. All right, so, but what can we do? Corey, what can we do
it's serious business. I think sometimes we just leave these buildings and take it for granted, you know, so what? But we don't look at all these various things, especially the health, because I think your life, how much more something you want of value than a life? Dr. Aline, you need to weigh in on this.
Yes. Okay, so it's interesting.
Daughter number two.
No, I was afraid. I was trying to figure out where he was going with this. Anyway, so one of the things that when you look at the responses to exposure to different substances, it's really a spectrum. So if you look at across the world where they've done surveys, looking at office workers, looking at people who have not been affected or, you know, sort of unbiased population, even when questions are asked, up to 60% of people actually have some issue. It's only about 4% that are actually so severe that they end up seeking medical attention. So that kind of tells you it really is a spectrum. You know, you probably think you get a little sniffle or you have headache or dizziness and you sort of dismiss it. Now, the issues, as he's pointed out, are multiple. One, some people are sensitized to mold. That's easy to see. Then there are the chemicals, various chemical sensitivities. So it could be that it could be something that you're cleaning with. It could be something that's actually being brought into the building.
Your VOCs.
Exactly. Mm. So you're talking about the volatile organic compounds, the VOCs. So these are things that are actually measured when IAQ and other companies go out and look to see what is in the environment. The other things are biologic agents. So sometimes you'll see that the patients, if you check, you'll see the measurements of Aspergillus, Cladosporum, and various bacteria in the environment. And then, strangely enough, electromagnetic fields. So all the computers and everything else that we're putting into our environment, some people are actually sensitive. And, you know, if you have the perfect storm, you have predisposition, you have multiple agents at work. So it's not just the building. A building by itself doesn't cause anything. It has to be other things at play, right? And I think that we have to be very much cognizant of that fact. So it's easy for people to try to finger the engineers and the architects. But the reality is that when we look at the environment as a whole, in fact, one of the things I was reading, you can clean your building, but if the vacuum cleaner that's being used to clean the building is not clean, you're really not doing anything. So we have to look at processes.
Public education. Because I know as soon as we get people ill, the first thing you do is industrial cleaning. But if you look at all the other things that you mentioned, industrial cleaning will not address those things.
Right. So prevention is better than cure. So if we start at the beginning, you know, it's better, you know, if you can save a little money, you don't have to go into the doctor, great. But, I don't know
what not for the doctor.
So maybe, you know, the architects are involved in sort of designing the building, making sure that the colors don't jar your nerves. And that also helps with your psychosocial, you know, the aspect of that, because that's important in terms of your response to illness. Then plants, how do we get rid of some of the toxins in the air? And as he pointed out, if your carbon monoxide levels are too high, what that means then is that carbon monoxide is binding to your hemoglobin molecule. And the hemoglobin is like a train. It takes oxygen around the body and deposits it where we need it to be. Now, if carbon monoxide attaches to hemoglobin, then you have to wait until that comes off because it irreversibly binds to your hemoglobin molecule. So you're essentially being poisoned, and you could be poisoned in small amounts over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Let me try you a little luck here, and this is how you get shortness of breath, right, because you're not getting the oxygen in the right place.
Correct. So it can cause shortness of breath.
Doctor number three.
You got three doctors in the house.
All right, let's take another call. 3 minutes afternoon, Brass Tacks Sunday. Good afternoon, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Corey, and your guest.
Hey, good afternoon.
Right. A question and then a suggestion. My question is, do you know of any building that is sick other than government buildings? And I ask that question because if only government buildings are the ones getting sick, well, then maybe the engineers and the architects and the designers of the government building may have to take some advice from those who do project building, because me personally, I don't know of any project building that has this syndrome problem, only government buildings. And some of them are just in close proximity to each other. For example, well, you can look at Don Warren, you have big buildings, so not only small buildings, not only big buildings that are getting sick, because you have big buildings in Warren like the ABC, you have the insurance, and you never heard of it. So it only seems to be the government building.
All right, let me take a pause and let the architect answer that one.
Yes, thank you for that question. I've had the great fortune of working on private homes, and not just private homes, but plantation homes, Carl Stone buildings. I worked on Claybury Plantation, which is in St. John. That was for private residents. And I worked on the Globe Finance building in Hastings, which is a commercial building, but it was originally a house many years ago. I think there are situations, especially in old buildings like that, we're looking at 18th, 19th century architecture and building types, where when we built out of Carl Stone, for example, there are a lot of buildings out there with people living in them with mold inside of those walls, right? Carl Stone is a very porous and relatively soft material when you want to compare it to concrete, and it will absorb moisture a lot faster than concrete. Now, the house in Claybury, the residents had, two children. One of them was very asthmatic. And one of the main reasons that they called me was they wanted to get the problem solved. Now, with Carl Stone buildings, people make the common mistake of plastering these buildings with cement, whether it's trowel plaster or it could be just be cementitious trowel. What that does to Carl Stone buildings is has a great adverse effect on your health. It actually traps the mold within the walls. Okay, so you could be living in Strathclyde, you could be in Belleville, you could be anywhere, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be a Carl Stone building, but any residence, and you may not be aware of this problem, and you may be suffering from these symptoms when the moisture gets into these blocks, and then people want to repair these buildings, right, and they want to spend the least amount of money in repairing it. So it's cheaper to plaster it with cement than to obviously plaster it with lime render, which is what you should be using on Carl Stone buildings. They compound the problem, and so when the moisture gets into the wall, it can't get back out. You're trapping it, and then you're breathing it in, and you will find these problems mostly on the ground floor. You have what we call rising damp coming from the foundation up. And of course, if it's a problem in the roof, you're going to have it from the roof coming down. So you could be surrounded. You could walk around this building, and you may not see it because the walls are quite thick, but it's quite prominent. You do see the moisture coming, and it would present itself as bulges on the wall. Now, some of these schools have this problem as well. You walk around schools, and I don't know about Common Mirror, but you have these issues where you might see moisture coming out of the wall, or a bulge coming out of the wall, and people might not even think twice about what it is. And when you go plastering these buildings with cement, you make the problem worse. So what is really key is if you have a building of this nature would be to get the advice of people who know how to use materials and what materials to use on these buildings, because again, what price can you put on your life and your health? It'd be better for you to import or make this, the lime render, lime wash locally. Very difficult to do, mind you, but you can import it. We did that for Globe Finance building. We did that in, that was completed in 2014, if I'm not mistaken, which is about 4 years ago now. And, well, I drive by the building on a rare occasion, but it still looks new to me in terms of the material. You don't see so much of the evidence of mold as you would see on new buildings, even such, having these problems. And so, yes, it does happen outside of commercial buildings. It happens on in your home. It can happen people not knowing.
But I guess with government buildings, it will be more pronounced because then you have
more public, the volume of people being affected.
Unions and so on, turning up the ante.
But what people don't realize to me is there's a cost to that, but cost to whom? There's a cost to the occupant for their health. And then your sick days increase. Mm-hmm. So it's a cost to the business. But then we look at it at a governmental level, it's a cost to the government because then that business, whatever it is less productive. Mm-hmm. So what's the impact on a dollar wise on the grander scheme of things rather than just you going to the doctor? Correct. Right?
That's what you're saying. Prevention definitely better than cure. Part two, caller.